Tape Identification. This is an interview with Miranda Morris-Nunn, who was on the early Garden History Society in Tasmania. Miranda, can you tell me how you first became involved with the Garden History Society?
I was working at the School of Environmental Design, which is the Tasmanian College of Advanced Education, then on Mount Nelson. And Phil Simons was working there as a landscape architecture lecturer. And it was just after, it was a few years after the Australian Heritage Commission had been set up, and they were really keen on expanding beyond the built environment. And I'm not quite sure what it was that, you know, who it was exactly who instigated it, but there was a national study of historical gardens, and the Heritage Commission organised for people in each state to do a survey of historic gardens. And I was employed by the School of Environmental Design to help Phil Simons do that. It seemed quite a radical thing at that time not to be looking at houses, you know, which was where the National Trust had been. And I suspect that it had been, there'd been some recognition of how many gardens were being damaged and how, you know, when the gardens weren't specifically protected, you'd get roadworks and subdivisions, and it was a way of just kind of assessing what was there.
So this was a national push, but what was the climate in Tasmania? Was there a recognition that Tasmania had any particular level of priority gardens?
I think there was a recognition that Tasmania was important. Victoria had, you got that same sense, but Tasmania was kind of known as the, you know, the Georgian place. I mean, I'm not sure whether correctly or not. But certainly there was an idea that there would be gardens here, and there were some places that I would say were probably already recognised as having important gardens, like, I don't know, Pansanga and Longford, and probably Woolmers. But we were also interested in looking at gardens that really hardly existed anymore, and we were interested in those early ways of trying to track down what a garden would have been like. And there was also a growing interest in what kind of plants had been grown and inventories and things of old plant, old imported plant types.
Well, that study that you referred to was pretty much the landmark for Tasmania. So how did you do it? Where did you begin?
I remember going on, driving round with Phil. We had a wonderful time, kind of almost knocking on doors and asking people if they knew people. And we did a lovely tour of the East Coast, you know, staying in places and just visiting. I think probably one of our initial ways of going about it, apart from peering over hedges, was looking at which houses were likely to have had important gardens. But we were also really aware of wanting not just to record gardens that were kind of, you know, architecturally landscaped, and that we wanted cottage gardens, and we want. So though, you know, we would stop in places, and Phil had a huge knowledge of gardens and botany, and, you know, she'd recognise a plant from miles off, and so we would hunt it down if, you know, if we saw a particularly unusual fuchsia or something, we would then go in. But mainly I'd been working at the School of Environmental Design, but I was about to move to Launceston, and so we divided ourselves a bit up into north and south as well. So I would go and visit the gardens around I can't actually remember. I think we went to Stanley at some point, but I can't really remember doing the Northwest Coast very much. And it was mainly the places within about a 50-mile radius of Launceston.
So when you went to a garden, what would you do?
Well, we would talk to the owners, first of all, and we would do a sketch of the garden and then try do a sketch of the kind of layout and then write down any plants that were still there and if they had any records of what had been there or what might have been cut down, we'd enter that in. It wasn't very sophisticated. I mean, there were forms that the Heritage Commission had, so we kind of went by the form, if you like, and we took photographs. Gave a bit of a historical context, but nothing that would stand up today, I would think. And we'd have cups of tea. That's sort of what I remember, is meeting nice people and having cups of tea in their kitchens. And it was most fun when I did it with Phil, when we did it together, but obviously that wasn't the common way of doing it, you know. Usually it was one or other of us.
Do you think some of the garden owners were flattered that you were taking an interest in their gardens?
Well, I think some of them were pleased. You know, the higher the social echelon, the less pleased and the more presumptuous it kind of became, I think. And, you know, so there was a bit of a change about who was doing who a favour in that sense. But usually, it was with people who enjoyed the joint exercise, who loved their gardens and were really pleased that other people were going to love their gardens.
And what was the feeling that you had on the completion of that study? Did you have a sense that it was a significant, looking retrospectively?
I think it was. We've stopped doing that kind of scale of study of anything, really. I think the Heritage Commission at that time, doing all these scoping studies, did a lot of really significant stuff. I mean, in gardens, but also industrial heritage and all those other areas. And I think it was really... You know, I think there was a level of awareness raised by doing that study that hadn't existed before. I haven't actually looked at what we did at that stage. I know Phil Simons produced a book on Tasmanian gardens, which was from that study.
And how was it received in Tasmania?
The book. Look, I don't know that it was received as such. I mean, it wasn't launched or anything. But I think, you know, it's the kind of later society. It grew quite a lot from that, and I would say that that was definitely the beginning of an interest, a kind of more general interest rather than an individual personal interest.
So how did your involvement with that study then transfer to the Garden History Society? Is there a link?
Yes, I'm a bit hazy about this, but I think the first time we decided we all wanted to meet the people who were doing it in each state. And I seem to remember that the first time we met was in Tasmania. And that we met in Launceston, so I was kind of hosting that first meeting. And we went and visited some gardens and talked about forming the society. We had another meeting the following year, so I'm not quite sure whether that first meeting was just all the state representatives meeting together or whether that was the start of the society. The next year it was in Victoria and there were far more people involved. But certainly at some point, either after one or the other, we decided to form a society because there were people interested who weren't undertaking the studies. And the studies were nearly finished at that time. And so I took on the newsletter. And I think I did three issues, although I can't actually remember.
We're talking about a national newsletter?
Yes, yeah. National, but not a very huge circulation. I'm trying to remember, there was somebody from Mullooly? Something like Mullooly Press in Canberra who...
Malini,
yes, who was publishing things on plants and... and so we got to know people who were doing other work in garden history apart from us. And the newsletter was really was about the history of gardens and gardening. And it wasn't just here, actually. I was just thinking there was a huge exhibition in England on garden history at that time. So there seemed to be quite an international interest in, well, even when I say international, kind of Anglo-Australian, perhaps, not so broad. And I'm sure that transferred. A lot of things came out about, you know, Capability Brown and Peter Watts was working on... I've completely gone, a very famous Australian gardener. Oh dear, a woman.
Edna Walling.
Yes, thank you. Edna Walling. So there were obviously things that were going beyond the recording of the gardens that were going on, and we wanted to have a newsletter that reflected that too.
Can you recall some of the subjects or articles?
No, I can't. I had a desperate search this morning for them and I couldn't find the journals, and I really don't know. But I'm sure there's someone would have them somewhere.
Was there much social networking involved with the newsletter? For example, was mostly article or information based rather than talking about what other groups were doing, events and things?
No, it's actually articles mainly about the histories of places. No, I mean there wasn't really much of a network at that. There wasn't a very big network at that time. I can't actually remember what the distribution was, but it would have been very small.
And how was it published?
I think I typed it up, you know. I think we had a daisy wheel at that time in Helvetica, and it was all very up-to-date. An Electroset on the cover, and the cover design was Phil's. It's kind of wreath of flowers. I think we allowed ourselves to have it stapled together and folded at a printer's, possibly. In fact, I think we might have even had it printed at a printer's. But it's kind of, you know, typed up and then shrunk down and then doubled up.
Can you tell me much about the society, the committee in Tasmania, who was on that? And I presume that you were part of that?
Well, there wasn't a committee in each state. We were just a national because, I mean, there were only about three or four of us in each place. So in the time that I was there, there weren't really state committees. We operated at a national level.
Mm. And can you remember some of the people that you were working with then?
Well, I wasn't working with them. I was quite isolated. I mean, you know, I was in the north and Phil was in the south. The other people in other states were people like Olin Richards and Warren Nichols and Peter Watts and James Broadbent, Howard Tanner, David Yankin was involved. We used to interact quite... I mean, you know, if only email had existed, it would have been much easier. But as it was mainly by letter and... I mean, it's not even often by phone that we'd connect up. And I think in the third year, there were people like Pat Cameron became involved, and far more. In fact, after the second kind of meeting we had, which was in Victoria, there were far more people. Victorians had become, I think they might have had their own association by then, so it had kind of expanded, and there were far more homeowners involved. And that then spread out, you know, kind of happened here as well. So at that meeting, it had suddenly really changed. It was, I'm trying to think who else was involved. Dame Elizabeth Murdoch was one of them. But I think May Casey was involved, who died some years ago now. And it felt to me a bit as if the whole idea of it had changed, and my work with the recording had ended by then. And I was sort of going on to different things. And it was no longer the quite what I wanted to be involved in.
So, when did you cease your involvement?
Well, I think it must have been three newsletters in, I guess, which was... I mean, I think the other thing was that it was a time of my life where I couldn't travel or anything, and the time that people got together were at these national meetings. So if they were, you know, if they weren't where I was, then I wasn't able to attend them. I think it was probably after about 3 years that I stopped being involved. I kind of stayed in touch with some of the people whose gardens I'd seen in around Launceston, and particularly with Woolmers, where I went on to do other studies of the same place. So
your involvement in an academic level continued past your involvement with the society?
Well, I shouldn't really call it academic, but it was kind of being interested in the history rather than the present, I think, was where my problem lay with it. And I was involved in heritage generally rather than gardens specifically. So I went on to do architectural and industrial heritage, and then I went on to do women's heritage. So I was more involved in, you know, the interpretation of place, that kind of thing. And it was really nice at one level to have, it was really important in terms of the gardens that there was this big following by the owners of those gardens. I think that was terribly important in terms of preserving those gardens. It was just that it gave it a different slant. And I mean, I didn't have a garden, and it wasn't something that I was doing.
So in Tasmania, who do you think were some of the key people that then were involved with the society when it became much more of a popular organisation? Do you recall any of those people? You mentioned Pat Cameron as one.
Well, I remember Pat Cameron, but I don't actually remember. I think I was kind of not involved by the time that happened, and I really don't have a good recollection of it. I'd be really interested in reading those first three newsletters, because I'm sure it would come back to me a bit.
So are you aware of what the Garden History Society does now? Would you be able to comment on the sort of activities and whether you think that's fitting into sort of any interest or having any value?
Look, I haven't been involved for so long that I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it has value. And I'm sure, you know, I love the way all these kind of plant exchanges and things began to happen after then. You know, people changing cuttings and going around collecting things from graveyards, and where there was a terrific enthusiasm. And I don't mean by my kind of absence from it that it wasn't going in a direction that was important. It was just that it wasn't my direction. And I don't think it would have survived going in the direction that I might have gone. It was too small a group involved with that kind of thing. So, I mean, if it's gone on doing that, being a kind of a support network with interests in historical gardens and plant exchange, then I think it's doing a really good job. But I don't know that that's what it's doing.
Yeah, that's part of what it's doing. There's also an academic stream where they foster research and that sort of thing. But looking back now, do you think... what can you say about why it happened then, why that interest then? Was it because of the Heritage Commission, or do you think there was just like a recognition that heritage gardens go with heritage properties?
I'm interested in the fact that it was happening in other places as well. Yeah, well, in Britain as well, and I don't know why it was happening there at the same time. And I'm just thinking, you know, Peter Watts's interest in Edna Walling already existed. So there was a recognition of Australian gardens, and it was happening, you know, in the 1970s, there was this really strong move towards native gardens, and exotic gardens were a bit of a no-no, you know. It was a bit pretty unpatriotic, really, to talk about important historic British gardens in Tasmania or whatever, which is what they were. Like, you know, I think we'd begun to move a bit away from that kind of need for a dichotomy, you know. It's I protecting either or. But there had been this thing that, you know, all exotic plants are weeds and we should pull them up and we should, you know, put our native species back in. And in a way, that was what was happening in, you know, gardens, new gardens that were being planted with native things. I don't know how that relates to where it was at, except it probably couldn't have happened 10 years earlier. And I think, you know, that landscape architecture as a taught subject, I don't know how common that was. It felt to me, you know, in the Department of Environmental Design, which was quite a radical department at the time, that there was a new fostering of social environments beyond buildings. I mean, it had really changed from being a school of architecture to being something that was much broader. And so the landscape was landscape and social space was a definite part of the built environment. So I think there was, I mean, within the college environment, I think that there was a recognition there already. And I think, you know, and the Heritage Commission was trying to redefine itself, and you know, it had its three sections. It had its, you know, the Aboriginal and natural and built, and there was some recognition that those separations were they weren't very natural boundaries, if you like.
Was it an exciting time for you when you think back of your involvement with the study and the beginnings of the Garden History Society?
It was very exciting. Yeah, I really, really loved it. It was, I mean, it was work that I really enjoyed doing. I mean, it had to be enjoyable, really, driving around looking at gardens. And so it was fabulous. And I really enjoyed doing the newsletter as well. I think it was an important time of my life. It's also, when I moved up to Launceston, I was quite isolated, and it was really nice to have that connection with this really, I mean, the whole group was really excited about what it was doing. So, yeah, it was a very exciting time.
And do you think there were some highlights?
Well, I think that trip I was telling you about up the East Coast with Phil when we first started out, and, you know, it was like a big girl's adventure, really. And Oh, she was such fun to be with anyway. And you know, we'd meet people and have a really nice time with people, and then we'd debrief, and it was terrific. And also the first meeting that we had in Launceston, where this small group that I was talking about earlier, we went and had picnics at Woolmer's and went around the gardens. We went to Pensanger, and I'm sure we went around several other gardens too. And it was just because it was kind of a new field in a way, that was really exciting. And we felt that, slightly trailblazing feel to it on a very sedate kind of subject. Yeah.
Do you think back now, if you hadn't done some of that pioneer work and collecting some of the information about some of those gardens, that would have been lost, that you've actually preserved something?
I think so. I mean, some of them were very nearly lost when we went. We included a lot of gardens where there were just really just traces. And I think the idea of just promoting the idea of preserving gardens was probably as important as the actual listings of them. I think it was a good thing to have done.
I think we've covered it.